Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, August 22nd. Mayor Melton has died at 86, remembered as a community leader. Larry Melton, Odessa's longest-serving mayor, died Monday after a lengthy battle with Parkinson's. He was 86. Melton was described by friends as a gentleman who was a man of faith and integrity, as well as a man of wit who enjoyed a good laugh. He was also known for his community service to his beloved Odessa. A graduate of Odessa High School in 1956, he married his wife, Jen Evelyn, in 1960, and the couple embarked on a life of service to the community that included his time as Odessa's mayor. Melton was mayor longer than anyone else in Odessa's history, from 2001 to 2012. And he will keep that record because the city charter has since been amended to limit mayors to 8 years. Odessan and former councilperson Peggy Dean said he was a unique person who had the ability to lead based upon knowledge and wit. He could mediate any situation because his first instinct was always to consider both sides before advancing a decision, she said. Dean said Melton was CEO of Johnson, Miller & Company, where she worked with him daily for more than 20 years. During 12 of those years, he served as either a city councilman or a mayor. He never missed a beat in his professional or political life, Dean said. He and Jen Evelyn were devoted to our city, and they made us all proud to be from Odessa. We will always remember his humor and the one clap applause that he instituted at functions, which still lives on today. Odessan Cal Hendrick, who is running for mayor himself this year, said losing Melton is a profound loss for our community and to me personally. Mayor Melton was always kind and courteous, Hendrick recalled. I personally witnessed Larry treating everyone from city employees to his opponents with respect and kindness. He was the finest example of a politician. He was honest, kept his word, and worked hard for the city of Odessa. Hendrick said he saw the former mayor at hundreds, if not thousands, of Odessa events during his time as mayor. In fact, I don't think Mayor Melton ever missed an event while serving as mayor, Hendrick said. He represented the city of Odessa with pride. Mayor Melton recognized that Odessa was more than its buildings and roads. It was about the people of Odessa. He was the best of the best in all of us. God bless Mayor Melton and his family during this difficult time. Former Mayor Lorraine Perryman called Melton a dear friend and a great asset to the community. He was kind, empathetic, and compassionate to everyone. During his long tenure as mayor, he served with dignity, integrity, and a desire to enhance our well-being, Perryman said. It is a sad day for Odessa to lose someone of his stature, but his legacy will endure. He was the embodiment of a servant leader, and we are all better for his efforts on our behalf and the role model provided by his exemplary life. Odessa Chamber President CEO Renee Earls called Melton a tremendous leader and community advocate, and most importantly, a fine man. He was always positive and truly believed in this community's potential. He set the bar high for others to follow. He was first class, and I will certainly miss him. Odessa American publisher Patrick Canty recalled Melton fondly. Larry Melton was not only a fine mayor, but he was also a wonderful person. As a mayor, he was always courteous and straightforward, and he possessed a type of wisdom that made you trust his judgment, Canty said. As a human being, he was pure class with an incredible sense of humor. Any event that Larry either emceed or participated in was bound to be fun. I was so fortunate to have had the privilege of knowing him. And Odessa is better off because of his years of community leadership. Melton had a hand in just about everything Odessa over the years. He was awarded various recognitions, including Odessa's Outstanding Citizen, Heritage of Odessa Foundation Community Statesman Award for Community Service, Boy Scouts Man of the Year, Best of the Permian Basin, the Rotary Wall of Fame, Odessa's Outstanding Young Man, and the Bill Elms United Way Award. In his obituary, his family wrote, he found his true calling as an Odessa City Councilman, followed by 11 years as mayor. He stepped down as the city's longest-serving mayor, known as an incredible public speaker. He gave 864 speeches during his tenure as mayor. State Representative Brooks Landgraf called him a prince of a man and a true public servant. Mayor Melton absolutely loved Odessa, and he proved it every day. Landgraf said he showed his dedication by being a happy warrior for our community during his tenure at City Hall, but moreover, he showed his care in the way he treated Odessans with unwavering decency and dignity in public and professional life alike. Landgraf agreed the mayor was a genuine gentleman who never forgot a name after he met someone. He was a steadfast leader without ever being flashy about it. Landgraf said Melton's time as a public servant was ending when Landgraf's was beginning, but that didn't stop him from being a friend and mentor to me, he said. I'll never forget the lessons he taught me, that governance is a people business and that you can still keep a sense of humor in politics. Odessan oilman Kirk Edwards remembered Melton as a kind and smart and wickedly funny person. He and his wife, Genevieve, were the perfect couple to represent Odessa and the Permian Basin for so many years, Edwards said. He tirelessly worked for the betterment of our community and set the bar high at what is meant to be a public servant. Edwards said Melton will truly be missed by Odessa. Dean said Melton will be remembered as a gentleman, a man of faith, father, friend, politician, and a professional with integrity and humor. It is a rare quality, but the perfect description of Larry Melton. It was my privilege to know him and work with him in so many realms. He leaves a legacy that will be remembered for many generations. Landgraf agreed. He was a life well lived, and Odessa is better because he served the city and its citizens. Landgraf said, Shelby and I join our fellow Odessans in mourning Mayor Melton's passing. Our hearts go out to lovely Genevieve and the wonderful Melton family, and we lift them up in our prayers for comfort and peace. Rest well, Mr. Mayor. After graduating from Texas Tech University with a double major in industrial engineering and math, Melton served as a lieutenant in the Army. He was stationed in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and was discharged as a captain. After a brief career in the oil and gas sector, he went on to an extended career in banking and accounting. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday at First Methodist Odessa. In lieu of flowers, the family asks for donations to the Larry Melton Fund at Medical Center Health System Foundation or the Larry Melton Graduation Scholarship at Odessa College Foundation. TxDOT issues I-20 traffic alert. The Texas Department of Transportation issued a traffic alert Wednesday for I-20 at Midkiff Road in Midland County. The I-20 construction team will be repairing a damaged traffic barrier in the median just east of Midkiff Road. The repairs are scheduled to begin Thursday morning, with completion scheduled September 6th. This work requires a traffic shift to provide workspace for the repairs. The east and westbound inside main lanes will be closed from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Thursday as this new traffic pattern is set up. Watch for slow-moving traffic in this work zone. Expect delays or use an alternate route if possible. Know before you go, use the Basin 20 app to plan your travel along Interstate Highway 20 construction zone. Chuck Wagon Gang heading to feed Ruidosa. Odessa's Goodwill Ambassadors, the Chuck Wagon Gang, will be making their way to Ruidosa this week to show some West Texas support to the victims and village of Ruidosa in the wake of the summer's devastating wildfires. The lunch is scheduled for noon Mountain Time, Saturday at Wingfield Park in Ruidosa. Along with the food, there will be entertainment. Gang boss Robert Rogers said the group goes where it is asked, plus there were some Odessa connections with this gig. The mayor, Lynn Crawford, is a former Odessan and Chuck Wagon Gang member. And the police chief in Ruidosa Downs is Joe Commander. Crawford requested the Chuck Wagon Gang's help. Rogers said they will be cooking for 3,500 people. About 30 people are going to help with serving and cooking. They will have brisket, pulled pork, pinto beans, potato salad, and iced tea. This particular event is going to operate a little differently than we normally do. Normally, when we go out to serve food at an event, we know exactly how many plates of food and how many people we're cooking for, and it's all prepaid, Rogers said. But for this, they will be raising funds, and it's free of charge to anyone that shows up. They don't have to pay for a plate of food. Just come get a good meal is basically what we're there for, Roger said. We are fundraising to cover our expenses to get there. We have had some amazing donations come in. United Supermarkets has helped us quite a bit with the cost of the food, Roger said. They would normally haul a lot of the food from Odessa to Ruidosa, but United will have a refrigerated trailer waiting for them at the supermarket in Ruidosa that they can pick up when they get there with their 18-wheeler. Any additional monies we raise will be donated directly back to the city of Ruidosa, Roger said. He noted that many of the Chuck Wagon Gang members have fond memories of vacations in Ruidosa. That's what hooked us in. That's a vacation spot. If you're not going to the lake, you're going to Ruidosa. That's exactly why, when we started hearing about fires, they decided to figure out a way to help the people there, he said. It's hard to find anybody from this end of the world that hasn't vacationed up here at some level, Rogers added. The nonprofit has 88 to 90 members, but not all of them are active. Like every volunteer organization, we struggle to bring new folks in the door. We've got a great crew this year. We've got 10 new guys who came in this year. We haven't seen a group of 10 new rookies in a long time, he said. Chuck Wagon Gang, which is all volunteer, averages about 60 events a year and has traveled to 26 states and 9 foreign countries. When people come through the line to get a plate of food, Roger said, you don't know what kind of day, week, or month they've had. If we can give them a big old West Texas grin and cut up with them and greet them and hand them a plate of good food, that's the payoff right there. That's why we go do it, Rogers said. If people would like to contribute, they can visit www.chuckwagoncommunityfund.org or mail checks to CWCF, P.O. Box 7103, Odessa, Texas 79760. Murray highlights ECISD at White House Tech Summit. Ector County ISD got more national notice recently when Superintendent Scott Murray was invited to the White House and U.S. Department of Education Summit on Digital Equity, Inclusion, and Emerging Technology. It included members of the philanthropic, education, policymaking, and business communities. The event also was a chance for ECISD to be recognized at a national level. They discussed what's happening from a technology perspective in the U.S., but more about where they are going as they think about educational technology. I spoke about parental access, really using technology to help more effectively engage our parents, guardians, aunts, uncles, whoever the adults are that are in the lives of our children. I used our own system as an example. In ECISD, parents can access academic information, health information, discipline information, academic growth information, information about your child's school curriculum, assignment information. There's a lot of information, and we make it easy for parents. You can access all of this on your cell phone. You don't have to sit down at a desktop computer. We kind of lifted up all of the different ways that our families have to access information about their own children and how once a parent has access to that information, how that empowers their own parental ability. With all of that knowledge, how much more effectively could a parent support the education of their child? They know what the teacher is doing in the classroom. They see the lesson plans. They know the learning that happens. They have access to their digital textbooks and digital resources so they can follow along with the learning of their children, Murray said. They also discussed how much more effective they could be and how they will leverage artificial intelligence to improve options for parents. So a child has an assignment. The parent electronically sees the assignment, what their child has. But what types of questions could you ask your child about that? The artificial intelligence could be that component about how a parent could use that information. That's the destination for us as an organization, he said. We're going to need help with getting to that destination. Other people talked about different uses for technology from the professional learning side, how they are developing teachers and families to effectively use the technological tools. The morning was spent with us sharing information with the group, and then the afternoon was the group using the information to come up with solutions, Murray said. It was a fascinating day. I loved it, he added. Getting all of the attendees together was challenging even for a day, but it was good because at the end of the day, everyone went away with a new network. Now we have some new people that we've all met and some good connections. We went away with seeds, ideas, and now it is our opportunity. For me specifically, I engaged with some folks, and so it's now up to me to reach out to those folks to begin to explore whether that's the policymaker, the entrepreneur, the CEO, or the funder. How can I be part of that continuation? Mary, who is retiring from ECISD, said it was good learning. I think the biggest takeaway of the day was ECISD and how much work has happened here. I think about the people in the organization, coordinators, directors, teachers that may not always see our district on the national level, and how some of this work is truly groundbreaking, Murray said. He added that he wished some of the district staff could be in the room. Sometimes they may not have an idea how innovative and forward-thinking they are in the work that's happening. It was fun. It was a good day, Murray said. He said the district has a multi-divisional team that is forming focused on artificial intelligence and how they will use it effectively in ECISD at every level. I will debrief them on this visit because there are some things that we talked about in that room that they're going to need to pay attention to. Sometimes when you think about artificial intelligence, you might only think about technology. In this case, AI has the potential to impact every division and department within the organization. So we want a diverse group of thinkers in the room as we tackle this opportunity, Miri said. The best example is a project in conjunction with Stanford University and one of ECISD's tutoring partners, where the tutors received artificial intelligence support as they tutored. The tutor would ask the child a question and the child would respond to the question. AI would analyze the question and the response and then provide a prompt for the tutor. Hey tutor, here's something that you could say in response to what the child did. Stanford is actually releasing the results of the study in September. We've already seen the early data. The students that were a part of the tutoring sessions that involved AI outperformed all of their peers. The only change that was made was that the artificial intelligence supported the tutor. In artificial intelligence, it can help us be better, more effective. That's a healthy usage of that, Miri said. ODC names new officers following shakeup. The Odessa Development Corporation voted in a new president and vice president Tuesday night, but it also voted to give Odessa City Attorney Dan Jones much more responsibility. Jay Kirk is now the ODC president, Melanie Hallman is the new vice president, and David Boughton is the new secretary. The changes were necessitated by the removal of former President Chris Crow and Vice President Jeff Russell by the city, Odessa City Council in recent weeks. Kirk used to be the ODC secretary. Every month, the ODC received a certain percentage of the sales tax brought in by the city, and that money is then offered as an incentive to get companies to come here, employ workers, and spend capital on new and existing facilities. However, in recent months, members of the City Council have been arguing with Crow and Russell over each other's interpretation of Section 501.103 of the Texas Local Government Code. Mayor Javier Hoven and several other City Council members believe the sales tax money given to the ODC can be used to address the city's water infrastructure and roads. Crow and Russell contend the money can only be used under certain narrow circumstances. They said they were removed from their posts because the city wants to use the money illegally, and they were the only impediment. The law reads, certain infrastructure improvement projects. In this subtitle, project includes expenditures that are found by the Board of Directors to be required or suitable for infrastructure necessary to promote or develop new or expanded business enterprises limited to 1. Streets and roads, rail spurs, water and sewer utilities, electric utilities or gas utilities, drainage, site improvements, and related improvements. 2. Telecommunications and internet improvements, or 3. Beach remediation along the Gulf of Mexico. Hoven became angry when Crow prohibited an attorney hired by the ODC, Jeff Moore, from speaking with anyone but himself and Russell about the government code. Russell said the more people who spoke with Moore, the more confusion resulted. Moore was hired last year after the ODC board decided they were interested in having someone other than a city attorney writing and or reviewing contracts, particularly in cases where the grantees are large corporations like Nacero. Moore was a city attorney in Austin and he worked on an economic development handbook while the head of the Texas Attorney General's Office's Municipal Affairs Section. As of last year, he was representing about 40 economic development corporations. On Tuesday night, the ODC board voted to take away many of Moore's responsibilities, but to keep him on board as a consultant. If the city council approves the changes moving forward, Jones will begin to prepare economic development performance agreements and attend both compliance committee and ODC meetings. He'll also prepare the ODC agenda with direction from the ODC board, prepare ODC resolutions, prepare downtown infrastructure and facade grant agreements, and annual ODC contractor agreements. While looking at their proposed changes to Jones' responsibilities, board member Tim Harry asked if someone would be looking over all proposed economic development performance agreements to cover the ODC. Harry said he remembers there being issues under former city attorney Natasha Brooks before Moore was hired. Jones said Moore could certainly review the agreements and he had no problem putting them in writing. Boughton said he thought that was a good idea as well. I think the important thing to understand is that Jeff Moore developed some very good templates for us, and so the legal department of the city is gonna, the intent would be to utilize those templates, Boughton said. And then with regard to the economic development agreements, you could just add reviewed by outside counsel. You could do the same thing with regard to the infrastructure grants. Hallman also made some suggestions. I would really suggest that we come up with an approach where, at minimum, any communications with Jeff Moore are in writing via email, and that Dan is copied so that we have some standardization across the board and ability to make sure that we're not having different interpretations of the same answer or anything like that. Difficulty understanding what's been asked and how it's been answered, Hallman said. In addition, Hallman said both Jones and Moore should have copies of all economic development agreements. And anytime there's a question for Mr. Moore, if we can make sure that it's emailed under that Dan is copied, and we can ensure that we're all receiving the communications and we don't have multiple parties trying to interpret anything, Hallman said. She further suggested Jones be conferenced in on any phone calls with Moore. We can do whatever y'all want to do, whatever will make y'all successful, because we want to work together. We want this to be a success, Jones said. Hallman's fellow board members agreed with her suggestions. The ODC board also voted to reimburse the city roughly $219,000 for legal, financial, city management, and city secretary services. They kept $30,000 in their budget for more. Odessa Family YMCA ready for second Pulling for Our Cause Clay Shoot Fundraiser. After a successful inaugural Pulling for Our Cause Clay Shoot Fundraiser in 2023, the Odessa Family YMCA announced the second annual Clay Shoot Fundraiser is scheduled to take place August 30th at Jake's Clay's, located at 13301 Farm to Market Road, 1379 in Midland. The fundraiser will include a clay shooting competition where competitors can test their aim and skill across various shooting stations. Prizes and awards will be given to individuals and teams. Breakfast and lunch will be served, and this is the perfect opportunity to network with fellow shooting enthusiasts and the Odessa Family YMCA supporters, the release said. We are excited to hold the second annual Pulling for Our Cause Clay Shoot Fundraiser, Odessa Family YMCA CEO Chrissy Medina said. After a wildly successful inaugural clay shoot last year, we have waited in anticipation to invite all of our supporters to the Odessa Family YMCA back to our event this year. All the proceeds from the event will benefit the Odessa Family YMCA's annual campaign, which provides financial assistance to Y memberships, learning centers, and sports programs. Sponsorship opportunities are available. To sign up or to register for your team, visit tinyurl.com/3T98 9TWT or the YMCA Central Welcome Desk. NTSB arrives to investigate plane crash. National Transportation Safety Board investigators were on site Wednesday to begin the process of documenting the scene of the crash of a Cessna Citation 550 that killed two people on board and injured one on the ground. The crash took place at 7 a.m. August 20th near Odessa. The preliminary information NTSB has is the plane took off from Odessa Schleimeyer Airport and crashed into a mobile home park shortly after. A post-impact fire ensued. Killed in the fatal mishap were two occupants on the doomed plane. One person, the female occupant of one of the trailers, was burned and injured. The two deceased were Joseph Vincent Suma, 48, of Bel Air, Texas, and Jolene Cavaretta Weatherly, 49, of Orange, Texas. Both were pronounced dead at the scene, a Texas Department of Public Safety news release said. Investigators recovered a cockpit, voice recorder, and other avionics to send to NTSB headquarters in Washington, D.C. for examination. The rest of the aircraft is currently being recovered to a secure facility for further evaluation, an NTSB statement said. During the on-scene plane phase of the investigative process, the NTSB does not determine or speculate about the cause of the accident. The fatal crash occurred just south of the county airport on the south side of Yukon Avenue, and the ensuing explosions and fire damaged several buildings, including trailer homes and Dewey's Breakfast Shop. Power to the immediate area was also knocked out. The Cessna 550 Citation II jet was destined for Ellington Airport in Houston. It was involved in an accident during a takeoff attempt. The accident destroyed the plane. NTSB investigations involve three primary areas: the pilot, the aircraft, and the operating environment. As part of this process, investigators will gather the following information and records: flight track data, recordings of any air traffic control communications, aircraft maintenance records, weather forecasts and actual weather and lighting conditions around the time of the accident, pilot's license, ratings, and recency of flight experience. 72-hour background check of the pilot to determine if there were any issues that could have affected the pilot's ability to safely operate the flight. Witness statements, electronic devices that could contain information relevant to the investigation. Any available surveillance video, including from doorbell cameras. Witnesses to the accident or those who have surveillance video or other information that could be relevant to the investigation are asked to contact the NTSB at witness@ntsb.gov. The statement said the NTSB has no role in the release of the identities of accident victims and/or the extent and number of injuries, nor does it release the identities of those injured or killed. That is handled by local authorities. A preliminary report will be available within 30 days. It can be accessed by searching our investigations database with the NTSB number CEN24FA320. It will also be posted on NTSB Newsroom Twitter. The preliminary report will contain factual information gathered during the initial phase of the investigation, a probable cause of the crash, along with other contributing factors, will be detailed in the final report, which is expected in 12 to 24 months. NTSB arrives to investigate plane crash. National Transportation Safety Board investigators were on site Wednesday to begin the process of documenting the scene of the crash of a Cessna Citation 550 that killed two people on board and injured one on the ground. The crash took place at 7 a.m. August 20th near Odessa. The preliminary information NTSB has is the plane took off from Odessa Schleimer Airport and crashed into a mobile home park shortly after. A post-impact fire ensued. Killed in the fatal mishap were two occupants on the doomed plane. One person, the female occupant of one of the trailers, was burned and injured. The two deceased were Joseph Vincent Suma, 48, of Bel Air, Texas, and Jolene Cavaretta Weatherly, 49, of Orange, Texas. Both were pronounced dead at the scene, a Texas Department of Public Safety news release said. Investigators recovered a cockpit, voice recorder, and other avionics to send to NTSB headquarters in Washington, D.C. for examination. The rest of the aircraft is currently being recovered to a secure facility for further evaluation, an NTSB statement said. During the on-scene plane phase of the investigative process, the NTSB does not determine or speculate about the cause of the accident. The fatal crash occurred just south of the county airport on the south side of Yukon Avenue, and the ensuing explosions and fire damaged several buildings, including trailer homes and Dewey's Breakfast Shop. Power to the immediate area was also knocked out. The Cessna 550 Citation II jet was destined for Ellington Airport in Houston. It was involved in an accident during a takeoff attempt. The accident destroyed the plane. NTSB investigations involve three primary areas: the pilot, the aircraft, and the operating environment. As part of this process, investigators will gather the following information and records: flight track data, recordings of any air traffic control communications, aircraft maintenance records, weather forecasts and actual weather and lighting conditions around the time of the accident, pilot's license, ratings, and recency of flight experience, 72-hour background check of the pilot to determine if there were any issues that could have affected the pilot's ability to safely operate the flight, witness statements, electronic devices that could contain information relevant to the investigation, any available surveillance video, including from doorbell cameras, witnesses to the accident or those who have surveillance video or other information that could be relevant to the investigation are asked to contact the NTSB at witness@ntsb.gov. The statement said the NTSB has no role in the release of the identities of accident victims and or the extent and number of injuries, nor does it release the identities of those injured or killed. That is handled by local authorities. A preliminary report will be available within 30 days. It can be accessed by searching our investigations database with the NTSB number CEN24FA320. It will also be posted on NTSB Newsroom Twitter. The preliminary report will contain factual information gathered during the initial phase of the investigation. A probable cause of the crash, along with other contributing factors, will be detailed in the final report, which is expected in 12 to 24 months. MISD created counseling tool adopted by state agency. The Texas Education Agency, TEA, has announced plans to standardize monitoring for counselor compliance with the state's 80-20 rule. The state will be using a tracking document created by Midland ISD Mental Health Coordinator Taylor Harris that has been used by this district the past 2 years. Earlier this year, the TEA audited school districts across the state to verify compliance with the 80-20 rule. MISD submitted its monthly log, which meticulously tracks counselors' time allocation in accordance with TEA guidelines. Impressed by its efficiency and thoroughness, the TEA reached out to MISD in June to request permission to use the log as a model for other districts statewide. We are honored that the TEA has chosen to adopt our tracking document as the standard for districts across Texas, Harris said in a news release. We are committed to supporting the mental health and well-being of our students, and I am proud to have helped contribute to that effort across the state. The TEA 80-20 rule ensures school counselors dedicate 80% of their time to district services for students, such as counseling, guidance lessons, and academic interventions, while the remaining 20% can be spent on indirect services, including administrative tasks and program planning. The goal of the rule is to maximize counselors' impact on student outcomes by focusing their efforts on direct interactions with students. Leadership Odessa Alumni Reception Set. Over the past 4-plus decades, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce has held Leadership Odessa, and on August 22nd, they will host graduates of that group for a reception. The Leadership Odessa Alumni Reception is planned for 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the Odessa Chamber, Suite 200, 700 North Grant Avenue. Carla Hartwig, Events and Program Specialist, said she expects about 200 attendees. There are more than 1,200 graduates, and the program is one of the longest running in the state. The goal is to revive the leadership alumni group. Chamber President and CEO Renee Earle said the group existed back in the 1990s, but like other organizations, it just kind of fizzled out. The people who were involved in it moved on to other things, and so for whatever reason, it was dormant with the chamber. Then Laura James, who was a graduate in 2021-22, and then the co-chair of this last year's group, is one person who has said she wanted to have an alumni group again, Earl said. Craig Stoker also talked about it. We gathered a few past chairs of Leadership Odessa to brainstorm what shape an alumni group might take. We knew we wanted to start with something social to remind our alumni what a fun and energetic community leadership Odessa has created. We also wanted to use the reception as an opportunity to get feedback from our alumni about where they would like to see the program go, said James, who was 2022-23 leadership co-chair. James said in an email that she would love to create a network of past Leadership Odessa participants across the generations of leadership classes where those who graduate the program can feed into the alumni group and have new opportunities to network and connect with leaders who share their passion for this community, whether that be through social activities, continued educational, volunteer, or leadership opportunities. She added that the biggest takeaway from Leadership Odessa is the people. The professional connections and friendships Leadership Odessa offers are truly special. So when the program ends, it is only natural for those involved to want to continue building on those relationships, James said. This group will keep those leaders meaningfully involved in our community. Those who graduate from the program often have a new or renewed pride in Odessa, and this group will allow them to continue on that path while also finding new avenues to become involved and contribute to what makes Odessa so special, she added. They have some scholarships that pay half the fee, which is $1,000 for the 9-month program. For nonprofits, that can be a hefty fee, so the chamber asks companies and donors to help support that, so the nonprofit pays half and a donor pays half. We feel like that's a great opportunity for leadership alumni to support the program, Earl said. Hardwick said they have 7 nonprofits signed up this year, which is a record for one. That really helps out an organization. I was a graduate in 92-93, it's hard to believe. I was a very young 20-something at Medical Center, starting out my marketing career there. The hospital has always been a wonderful advocate for getting their employees involved in the community, so I was one of many who was going through the program, Earl said. Although she was born and raised in Odessa, she found there was a lot to learn about the community. I would say that's a big reason why I am in the role I am today with the Chamber, because it was at that same time that I worked with the Chamber on the Buy the Basin campaign that we kicked off. It was a wrap at some time period. That's probably how I got involved with the Chamber as their leadership originally, Earls said. Companies put employees through the program. It starts with a reception where many of them might not know each other. They come here for an hour, hour and a half, and they do an icebreaker to just try to get to know each other well. Then by the weekend, they're headed to Prude Ranch and they spend the weekend together. They do a ropes course, which is a physical exercise, and it's also a lot of mental. They ride a bus down there together. They have roommates, so they know each other a lot better in a very isolated area for the weekend. Then they ride home on that afternoon and then every third Thursday from October to May, they're meeting together for the entire day, Earl said. Hardwick said topics are divided into government and public safety, business and industry, arts and culture, medical services, social services, and energy. Energy is a new one. That was a recommendation from someone who had gone through the program a couple of years ago, Earl said. Hardwick said every session someone walks away saying they learned something new about Odessa. Whether you've lived here all your life or you've lived here one day, you are going to learn an abundant amount of information about our community and really see it from different eyes. The goal of it, and the reason it's called leadership, is we hope that at the end of 9 months, they have really found a niche in either an area of service or a particular organization that they want to find out more about, and they delve into some type of service, either through volunteer or through a board placement, Earl said. After the government and public safety session last October, Hardwick said a couple of them got together and decided they wanted to do something special for first responders. They chose Odessa Fire Rescue, and amongst themselves, as a group, as a class, they raised all of the funds needed to feed for 3 days in a row every fireman in the city, Hardwick said. That was their idea. They spearheaded it. They collected all the money. They cooked the meals. They enjoyed it so much that they say that that's going to be a long-standing thing for that class each year. It may not necessarily always be OFR. It could be the police department or another organization that they want to give back to in some way. It all comes from Leadership Odessa, what they witnessed and experienced and who they talked to, she added. If they decide to make the alumni a committee, it would be under the Chamber of Commerce, which will provide structure and support for the organization. That's what we're hoping will happen after they all come together next week, and after the survey that we're passing out, that they all decide, yes, let's do something with this, Hartwig said. Innovation Achievement Acclaim Central to Scott Murray's Tenure in ECISD. When the drop of the board president's gavel signaled the adjournment of the school board meeting on August 20th, it also signaled the official end of Dr. Scott Murray's tenure as Ector County ISD Superintendent of Schools, an ECISD news release said. Dr. Murray served the ECISD community as superintendent for 5 years. It was an eventful 5 years filled with tragedy, a community-wide mass shooting and the COVID pandemic, and triumph, persevering through those events and achieving the district's first B rating, and saw ECISD earn state and national acclaim for its initiatives and achievements. Upon arriving in 2019, Dr. Murray worked with the Board of Trustees to finalize a strategic plan with three key areas of focus: foundational excellence, talent development, and the learning journey. A look at some of the district's accomplishments under Dr. Murray's guidance led the successful passage of record $424 million school bond package in November 2023 that will bring long-needed repairs, renovations, and new construction. Fast track to one-to-one technology initiatives, providing every student and every staff member with a computing device. Expanded availability of high-speed internet to sparsely served and impoverished neighborhoods, including a first-of-its-kind agreement with SpaceX to provide broadband service to families. Expanded pre-kindergarten program to full day for four-year-olds. Created a half-day pre-K program for three-year-olds that includes an innovative partnership with Odessa YMCA. Implemented blended learning and the use of adaptive technology, AI, to expand the teacher's reach and effectiveness. Pioneered school district's use of high-impact virtual tutoring to overcome COVID-related learning gaps using outcomes-based contracting to incentivize tutoring providers to accelerate student learning. Established universal feeding, free breakfast and free lunch offered to every student every day. Cultivated partnerships and grant opportunities that resulted in more than $85 million of support. Oversaw the development of 15 talent pipelines, creating Grow Our Own programs for teachers, principals, counselors, and diagnosticians. One of the first three school districts in Texas to have its own educator preparation program to certify teachers, Odessa Pathway to Teaching. One of the few school districts in the nation with a registered apprenticeship program for teachers. The first school district in the nation with a registered apprenticeship program for principals. Early adopter of the teacher incentive allotment, a strategic compensation initiative. Adopted the opportunity culture strategic staffing model to extend the reach of the most effective teachers and compensate them substantially. Raise starting teachers' pay to more than $60,000, created a system of stackable incentives making it possible for ECISD teachers to earn more than $100,000, reduced teacher vacancies from 350 in 2019 to 29 in 2024. In 2022, ECISD earned a B rating from the Texas Education Agency, its highest rating ever, increased kindergarten readiness from 35% to 54%, increased college, career, and military readiness 56% to 88%, increased graduation rate to a 20-year high of 85.7%, increased SAT performance, increased College Board recognitions, improved advanced placement results. ECISD earned 2022 School District of the Year from the Mexican American School Board Association, Region 18 Superintendent of the Year 2022, finalist for State Superintendent of the Year 2020, Top 100 Influencers in Education from District Administration, Dallas Morning News finalist for Texan of the Year for leadership following Odessa's mass shooting of 2019. Dr. Mary brought unprecedented innovation and recognition to Ector County ISD. Among his accolades are an appointment by Texas Governor Greg Abbott to the State Board of Educator Certification, SBEC, where he serves as vice chair, an appointment by Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick to the Broadband Development Office Board of Advisors, and multiple invitations to testify before congressional committees and Texas House and Senate Committee regarding such topics as teacher recruiting and retention, strategies to accelerate student learning, and technology innovation. Under his leadership, the district's work has been regularly profiled by state and national outlets over the past 5 years. Now he begins a new role with ECISD as Superintendent Emeritus, an advisory role to support the interim superintendent and potentially the next full-time superintendent, and ensure a smooth transition to new leadership. He will continue in this role through January 31st, 2025. Obituaries, Michael Isaiah Sanchez. Michael Isaiah Sanchez will be profoundly missed by all who had the privilege of experiencing his faith-filled, intelligent, and loving presence. Visitation for Michael will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 21st at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Funeral service will be 1 p.m. Thursday, August 22nd at First United Pentecostal Church, with a burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery in the Rose Hill section. Kenneth Edward Williams. Kenneth Edward Williams, 57, of Odessa, passed away on August 18th in Odessa. Visitation will be held at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday, August 22nd at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, August 23rd at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. The burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. John E. Morris. John E. Morris of Gardendale passed away on August 15th. A celebration of life will be held at the shop in Gardendale on Sunday, September 1st at 10 a.m. with lunch to follow. Larry Leon Melton. Larry L. Melton died after a lengthy battle with Parkinson's on August 19th in Odessa. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 p.m. at First Methodist Church on Friday, August 23rd. Jose Guadalupe Lupe Gonzalez. Jose Guadalupe Lupe Gonzalez, 86, of Odessa, passed away on August 17th. The visitation will be from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, August 21st, with a recitation of the Rosary to follow at 6 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Mass of burial held 11 a.m. Thursday, August 22nd at St. Mary's Catholic Church, with Father Bernard officiating.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.